accession number 26735, reel 1.
Ken Lockyer, reel 1. Can you tell me first of all where you were born?
In Bristol.
Uh-huh. And what did your father do?
Well, he was in his main part of his life, he was a freight checker in Canada on the railway.
Oh, he was Canadian, was he? Or
no.
He went over
but
there.
We went out there when I was 4 years old.
Right. So you were born in Bristol and then moved to Canada.
Yes, and then we came back again.
Right. And did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had one brother and one sister.
Right. And where did you come in the family?
Oh, I was... my brother and sister were like half brother and sister, because they had a different father. Because their father had originally died.
Yeah. And your mother had married again.
Yes.
And then you came along.
Yeah.
So you were the younger one. Yeah. So what age were you when you came back from Canada?
About 14.
Right. So you went to school out there?
Yes.
Did you do any exams, or did you leave with a certificate, or...?
No, I didn't leave with a certificate, other than the annual reports everybody had, you know. Yeah.
So when you came back to Bristol, did you go to work then, or did you stay...
Yeah, I went to work then.
Right. What did you want to do? Did you have any ambitions?
Well, of course, I was a bit of a fish out of water coming back to England at the time. And the fact that I'd had my education in Canada, nobody seemed to have... They think I must have lived in the backwoods, you know.
Whereabouts were you in Canada?
I was in Toronto.
Right.
But I did evening classes and things like that when I came back here.
In what subjects?
Well, chiefly... business, accountancy.
That's what you were interested in, was it?
It was, really. And yet, when I started work, I was apprenticed to a draper. And so I had 3 years apprenticeship for that. It wasn't really my choice, in a way, but it was very difficult. I found it very difficult to get any work at all, actually.
So what sort of work were you actually doing as an apprentice? Was this a draper's shop? Or
yes, it was a draper's shop.
And were they making up things for people, or were you just selling?
No, just selling. Well, as a matter of fact, most of my time I spent doing window dressing. But
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Did you do any sports when you were a teenager?
No. I was involved in the Sea Scouts.
You were interested in sailing, were you?
Yes, we did quite a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of craft did you sail in?
Well, we had four boats, actually. We had a whaler, we had a 14-foot national sailing dinghy, and... we had two other rowing boats, ex-naval boats, and we had several canoes, so we had a variety.
Yeah. So did that help you when you were joining the Marines?
Well, not really. No, I mean, it was... of course, I wanted to get in the Navy, and they said that they had no they couldn't cope with any more recruits at the time. So... Well, I sort of opted for the Marines, which really, looking back with hindsight, was a much better proposition, I think.
So did you volunteer?
No, it was the ordinary call-up. But several of my friends, we were all the same age, and they volunteered, and they were put back. They said, well, you'll be the first call-up.
So when you got your call-up papers, where did they tell you to report to?
What, in Bristol?
Well, when you were...
I can't remember, Pruitt Street in Bristol.
Yeah, that was a recruiting office.
That was the recruiting office.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you went along there, and what did they say to you?
Well, you just had a medical examination. And then you were, you know, sent home again and for a couple of weeks, and then we went to Yeovil.
Right. And you were joining the Marines, were you?
Yes.
Right. So what questions had they asked you to see if you were suitable for the Marines?
No idea.
Oh, right.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't think there was very much discussion about anything, really.
What did you know about the Marines? Did you know anything?
Well, my mother's first husband was a regular Marine, so there's a little bit of background there, but not very much.
What did your parents think about you going into the services?
My mother wasn't at all keen when I said I'm going into the Marines. I think she thought that was a bit too dangerous.
Yeah. What about your father? Had he been a soldier?
No.
Maybe?
No.
So you set off for Yeovil. Do you remember that journey there? Did you go on the train?
Yes, you went on the train, yeah. And
were there other people on going to the same destination?
Yes, yes. When we arrived at Yeovil Station, we found there's quite a number of, chiefly from Bristol, you see, which so it made an easy introduction, really, to service life, you know.
Did they meet you at the station?
Yes.
Yeah. And they took you to Yeovil Camp, did they?
Yes.
Yeah. What sort of a place was that then?
Well, that was quite good, actually. It was, I presume it was an army camp, really. But we were in Loughton Barracks. There were two barracks there, Loughton and Houndstone. We were in Loughton.
And what was your sort of reception like? I mean, they got all these young men turning up and they had to get you organised and get you equipped and so on. How did that go on?
Oh, it seemed to be quite straightforward. No problems there. You know, we're given a bed and a locker and a... And then you've just picked up your uniform bit by bit, actually, over the next couple of days. So
what were the NCOs like who were instructing you and looking after you and showing you the ropes?
They were very good.
Were they?
Yeah.
How did they treat you?
They were all regulars, of course. And, they treated us very well.
What did they tell you about the Marines? Were they very proud of it and...
Oh, yes, we used to have a few lectures on the history of the Marines, you know.
So what was a day like then at Loughton Barracks when they started, got to get you trained and the rest of it? Did they get you up early?
Well, yes, quite early. And we were more civilized than some people, I think, because we... At least we had breakfast first. We didn't go out running around till after breakfast. Only I have heard of some units that are away early, you know. And we did morning marching and physical training kind of things. And then we go on to gunnery instruction during the afternoon.
How did you get on with the marching?
Yeah, it was fine.
You were all right. What about the PT? I expect you did quite a lot of that, did you?
Not a lot, but I suppose, considering, not a great deal.
Mm. Was it quite exhausting, this?
I didn't find it so.
Mm-hmm. You were quite fit, were you?
Yes.
Yeah. Had you kept yourself fit? You weren't into sport, but...
No, I didn't do any sport. Mm. No.
Did you do walking or cycling?
Well, we used to go on quite long sort of marches. Mm. You know, sort of 5 miles or more. Mm. Which was part of the training.
So what sort of gunnery did you do? What sort of weapons?
We were anti-aircraft guns. Mm-hmm. We were trained on 3.7.
And what are they like? Tell me how you had to be trained. I mean, was this in teams or?
Yes.
Yeah. So how many would be in a team?
Well, on a gun there would be a layer and trainer. That's one for swivelling the gun around sideways, and the other one for the elevation going up and down. Then you'd have a person to sort of push the shell up into the breech at the back, and you'd have a sergeant in charge of the gun, and because he would relay information to the gun's crews during firing. And then there were ammunition numbers which carried the shells to the back of the gun and set the fuses on the shells. So it was, fairly straightforward stuff, really. It was all a question of getting up speed, you know. That was the essence of the whole business. You know, that,
Did you get quicker? Oh,
yes. It became more efficient generally.
So how long were you at Loughton Barracks?
Well, we went there in February, and I suppose March. I suppose a month and a half, I should think. Mm-hmm. 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
And when you finished there, did you feel like a soldier? Were you,
Well, I suppose, yeah.
And you passed out as a Marine, did you?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. And where to then?
Well, then we went to a firing camp in North Wales.
Mm-hmm. What was that like? Was that in the mountains or...?
Well, it was on the sea coast.
What was that called? Never mind if you can't remember. It was a firing camp, was it?
Yes, yes. We stayed in the small town, and then we went by rail up the coast to where the guns were, where the guns were actually fixed up, because it was used by other people as well, you know. And we were there about a week, I think. Then we went back to Exmouth, which was our main depot. We were registered there.
Yeah. What sort of a place was that? Because it's quite a little town, isn't it, Exmouth?
Exton.
Sorry?
Exton.
Exton, right. Yeah. Okay. Whereabouts is that?
Well, that's halfway between Exmouth and Exeter.
Oh, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was a camp, was it?
Yeah, that was, it still is now, it's the main Marine depot now.
What sort of a place was it then when you got there?
Oh, they were still building it, really. We were in tents at the time.
Really?
But we used to go down to the main camp for meals, and that was a, properly built dining facilities and things like that.
And your training went on there, did it?
Well, we stayed there for a very short while, and then we came. It was at the Dunkirk time, and so we left the camp there, and we were taken straight through to Dover by train, and with the idea of going over to be part of the rear guard. In France, and we were due to go to Calais, but after lining up beside the ship, we didn't get on the ship. We came back and went to Folkestone.
Oh, right, yeah.
And we were up on the cliffs above Folkestone, and there we went into active service, really. That was the first time.
Yeah, and that was, you were manning guns, were you, on the
cliffs? Yes.
What did you see? I mean, did you see people coming back from Dunkirk? What did you hear?
Oh, yes. I mean, there were you know, they were roaming about in Exeter, hundreds of them, all very sort of unkempt and a bit disorderly, actually, in parts.
Yeah. Was this in Dover, or was this...
No, this was...
come down to Exeter?
This was Exeter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't see any of that in Dover.
Right, yeah. What did you know about the Dunkirk episode then? Did you hear that it had been such a huge loss of life and...
Well, chiefly, we didn't see very much because... we were, you know, out of the town, really. We were out up on the cliffs between Dover and Folkestone. I mean, we didn't really come in contact with very many other people then. We'd see a few if we went down into the town, you know.
Did you see any of the ships coming back, or had they all come back by
the... No, they didn't come into, well, at least not where we could see.
So you were up on the cliffs at Folkestone and manning the ACAT guns. Was there much to fire at? I mean, were you...
Oh, yes, we were very busy there.
Really?
Yeah, we did very well, actually.
Mm. Were you working in shifts, were you, manning the guns?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you sort of sleep when you're not on duty at first. It was a question of firing all the time at something. And of course, when you're firing at night as well, you got into a sort of sleep and eat sort of routine, nothing else, you know.
And how effective were you at hitting aircraft?
Very good, actually. We've got we were mentioned a couple of times in the newspapers.
Really?
Yeah. But
what's the art of hitting an aircraft? I mean, did you develop
you have a predictor, which... Do you know the anti-aircraft setup? You have a...
Sorry, height... but you explain it to me.
You have a height finder, and that will sort of trigonometrically sort of tell you how far away the aeroplane is, and that's... the information's fed into a predictor, which is a large box. Oh, but as tall as that, up to the top of that lamp.
Oh, right. There. 4 feet tall.
Yeah, about 4 foot tall, yeah. About a square box. And you had, I think it's four operators for that. And when they get the aeroplane in their sights, they keep it, they follow it around by little handles they turn, which swivels this box around. And that, in turn, works out how far away it is, so that your shell that you fire from the gun, when it will explode. So each shell that is fired is already predetermined when it will explode. So and that information from the predictor is electrically transmitted to the gun. So on the gun you have the people that position the gun, they have an electrical dial and a mechanical dial, and what you have to do, the predictor will produce the electrical information, and the person on the gun itself will have to, by manual handles, turn the gun to keep the manual marker on top of the electrical one. And of course that's very easy when you're practicing, but when you're firing, of course everything's jumping about and it's not quite so simple.
So you'd all develop skills at this, would you?
Yes.
With your experience?
Yes, you were all trained for all the duties on the gun. But once we actually got into action stations, then we always had the same people taking the same job.
Right. And what was your job?
Well, I was the layer. I turned the gun round horizontally That's right, horizontally, yeah. And somebody else elevated the gun up and down.
So you'd really be working as a team, wouldn't you? You'd all yes. be fitting it together and relying on each other and working very quickly, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. So you could take quite a pride in that, couldn't you?
Well, I think so. I mean, we were very fortunate, really, because we were actually stationed... The place we were stationed at near Folkestone was partly for the defence of Hawkins Airdrome, which was a fighter drone. And, of course, they were raided quite often by the German planes. So, you know, we did a fair amount of firing in defence of them.
And you'd also know all the aircraft, be able to identify them, I imagine.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How had you been taught that?
Well, as part of the lectures we had when we first joined up. But you soon get to know them in, you know, in actual practice.
So how long were you on these cliffs doing this work?
Well, we were there through the Battle of Britain days. I suppose it was till about the end of October, I think.
So quite a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you get quite tired, you know, doing these shifts? I mean, did you get time off or...?
Well, at the first part, we were very tired. You know, we sort of... As a matter of fact, we would... We'd be called down after firing, and people had been so tired that they sat there at the wheel, and there's when you come out for the next alarm, there you find there's somebody out there asleep. You know, from the, they didn't sort of go down after the last all clear. You know, but it was for a while. It was like that. And then we stopped firing at night time, so that put things back on an even keel then. Mm.
Mm. So after the end of October, was it, that you moved from there? Where did you go then?
We went to a place outside of Portsmouth called Horndean. And
we that was a permanent camp, was it, or...?
No, we were billeted in a big house, actually, and we were rather spread around a village, actually. Mm-hmm. And then we went on leave for Christmas.
Uh-huh. And what was that Christmas like? Because it was the first sort of real Christmas of the war, wasn't it?
It was, yes. Funny thing is that you felt, although we'd, you know, done quite a lot of firing, when you're home and sat in an ordinary house and you hear the bombs dropping outside, you sort of feel so helpless. You know, it's sort of seems strange, really. You think you take it all in your stride, but you didn't really. It sort of seemed you can't do anything about it. You know, just sit and hope they don't hit you.
Was that when Bristol got bombed a lot? Was it that winter or...?
Yes. Mm. It was after we'd gone away, I think. I can't remember when that was bombed. Mm.
Yeah. So you had your leave for Christmas and then you went back to Horndean, did you?
No, we didn't go back to there. We went home on a Christmas leave from there. And then from after that was finished, we went back to our depot at Exton. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any idea where you'd be used next or
no.
what your duties would be?
No.
Had you imagined that you'd be on coastal duties in the UK all the time, or did you think you might go abroad?
Well, no, I didn't think... No, we didn't expect to stay in England, really, because the organisation, our organisation, was as a mobile naval base defence. And so we would be sent anywhere as a sort of a mixed lot, you know, that to defend a harbour. So we knew we would be sent somewhere overseas. But
what did you feel about that?
Well, I had no particular opinions, really, you know, at the time. I mean, you never know where you're going to be shunted off to, do you, really?
Yeah. Had you made lots of friends in the Marines?
Oh, yes, a very good crowd, and we still keep in touch with quite a lot of them. Yeah, very good. Yeah. And fortunately, we didn't change very much. You know, we seemed to keep the same crowd all together. Like some units, they bring new ones in and others leave and they mix them up, you know, but we seem to stay as a sort of self-contained lot, which was very good, really.
Yeah. So you went to Exton in January, and did you stay there long, or...?
No, just long enough to sort of pick up our... Well, we had tropical gear then as well, so we knew we were going somewhere warmer.
So you've been issued with a tropical kit, yeah. Any other preparations for going abroad? Did you have injections or...?
Oh, yes, you have all that lot. Yeah.
And so when did you move from Exton then? That was when you went abroad, was it?
Yes, I suppose that was... It was either January or early February. Mm-hmm. We went to Scotland and picked up a convoy up there.
Which port was that?
Gourock.
Gourock, yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And what was the ship that you went on?
The Rangitata.
Oh, yeah. And what was it like getting on that ship? It must have been quite a busy scene at the port.
Well, we were ferried out to the ship, which wasn't lying alongside a dock, you know. And... But it was a bit chaotic, actually, because the ship was, crammed full of people. And the sort of dining facilities were pretty poor, really. But still.
Wasn't too comfortable then?
No, not really.
Yeah. And you set off in a convoy?
Yeah.
What were your feelings about that? Because the U-boats were out there, weren't they?
Yeah, well, you just keep your fingers crossed, really.
And what was the trip like?
Well, we went across almost to Canada at first, down the American coast, and then came back east again to, called into Freetown in Sierra Leone, just for refueling, I think. Got off the ships. Then we went from there to Durban in South Africa.
Oh, yeah. Did you stop there?
We stopped there. We had a week there.
Did you?
That was very pleasant.
Was it? What was it like?
And, of course, all the lights were on, and, you sort of... the people there were very good to us. They sort of took us around and showed us the scenery and gave us meals and things. So, it was very pleasant. Then we changed ships, and because they wanted the refrigerator, we were on the Rangitata was a New Zealand shipping company refrigerated boat, and they wanted the boat for carrying more food, I suppose, to Britain. So we were transferred to another boat called the Elizabethville, which was Dutch or Belgian, I think, actually. And we travelled from there up to Egypt.
Right. Had you any idea where you were going?
No.
How much did you hear about what was going on in the war? Did you get news of...
Well, I suppose you had, you know, whatever was allowed by the censor, you know, the or the news people, I suppose they were limited, you know, they very likely wouldn't give you all the bad news, perhaps, you know.
I'll stop you just there. Ken Lockyer, end of reel one. Ken Lockyer, reel two. So where did you land in Egypt?
Port Said. No, Port Tufik, actually. Port Tufik, which is a little bit further south.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we went by train.